I want to pick up where I left off last Sunday talking about saving. We're still looking at money and wealth. And I want to talk about why we save today. There are several reasons for it. The first of which, I believe, is that we should be good stewards of what God has given to us. And God does commend saving and investing in the scripture. If you want to, you can turn to Matthew 25. I'm not going to read this whole passage because we're going to look at this passage later on in this series when we get to investing. Because really here in Matthew 25, this is the parable of the talents. And then also in Luke 19 is the parable of the pounds. And these are similar. They're not the same, but they are similar. And in the parable of the talents, which you find in Matthew 25, 14 through 30, you have the Lord of some servants that is going off into a far country to receive a kingdom. And this is likened unto the kingdom of heaven. This is a parable of the second coming. Our Lord went to heaven. He's going to come back someday and reckon with us. And he gave to his servants talents. There's a dual meaning here, I think, because, or at least in our world, I think there is. Talents in these days was a weight of gold or money, so he gave them money. But then, as we use talents today, you think about talents, like abilities and skills that he's given to us. So he's given us abilities and skills that he expects us to use, to invest in, to improve. But in this was a parable about money, about wealth, but it's likened unto kingdom work. So he gives one 5 talents, he gives another 2 talents, and he gives another 1 talent. And you've probably read the parable before. The one that received the 5 talents, he trades. In other words, he invests. That's why traders are called investors, or investors are called traders, right? So he invests his money, he trades it, and he ends up with 5 more talents. So he's got 10 talents. The man with the 2 talents, he trades, and he ends up with 2 more, so he has 4. And then the man with the 1 digs a hole, buries it in the earth. He didn't do anything with it. And the Lord comes back, and he's very pleased with the first 2 that traded, invested, doubled their money. He's not happy with the man that buried it in the earth. He said, you could have at least given it to the bank, to the exchangers. I could have gotten some usury, some interest on my money. He wasn't happy about that. But all 3 of these, notice, they were savers. They didn't spend any of the money that the Lord gave them, right? They saved it all and invested it all. Now, I'm not saying we have to do that. But the point is, in order to invest, they had to first save. You can't invest what you haven't saved. You first have to save. So the Bible clearly teaches this. In the parable of the pounds, it was the same thing, only slightly different. He gave each of them a pound, and one of them got busy and made 10 pounds. He did a 10x on his money. That's a pretty good return. And that's possible, easily possible, in the market today. Over the course of time, you know, 10xing your money is not a big deal. You can probably do that in a period of time. I mean, for instance, like, let's say you would have invested just in plain old gold, just bought yourself an ounce of gold 25 years ago. You'd have 10xed your investment. You could have bought it for about $300. It's worth $3,000 now, right? So it's not impossible to do. These days, to do something like that. You can also lose about that much money also when you buy at the wrong time and sell at the wrong time. But anyway, we'll talk about investing later. That's not what I want to talk about today. But same thing with the parable of the pounds in Luke 19. They didn't just go blow the pound, right? See, if you give the average American a pound or a talent today and come back and reckon with him and see what he's got, you know, in a few years from now, he's got nothing because he went and blew it on dinner or a snazzy car or something, right? It's gone. So you got to save before you invest. So the Bible clearly teaches this. Now, the Bible teaches that a fool spends everything that he makes. He doesn't save anything. Proverbs 21 and verse 20. Proverbs 21 and verse 20. There's treasure to be desired, and oil in the dwelling of the wise, but a foolish man spendeth it up. In other words, A wise person's dwelling has treasure and oil in it. Oil was a valuable thing in those days, like olive oil, right? All the oil that you used to eat. It was expensive. You got to press the olives, and it's not just some cheap thing. So he has expensive things in his house, treasure. He's got wealth, money, whatever laid up in his house. That's the wise man. How did he do that? Well, he didn't spend it all, right? He saved some of it. He underconsumed. But the foolish man, it says, spendeth it up. He just spent everything. You go into his house, the cupboards are bare. He's got nothing. He's got no money. He's got no wealth. He's got nothing because he just spent it all. He's a consumer like most Americans are. So a foolish man spends everything he makes, and then an even bigger fool spends more than he makes. And that's called going into debt. So it's bad enough to spend everything you make. It's even worse to spend what you didn't make and borrow what somebody else made and then pay them back interest on what they made and were able to loan to you. The Bible tells us in Proverbs 11 and verse 16 that strong men retain riches. Their money just doesn't fall through their fingers like other men's money does. Now, of course, everybody's going to lose money from time to time. Everybody's going to make a bad business decision, a bad investment decision. Things happen. You lose your job and you got to spend some of your savings down, right? So nobody's going to be able to hold on to everything they've ever saved, right? That's not going to happen. But a strong man will hold on to what he has saved. He will retain as much of it as possible. Proverbs 11 and verse 16. It says, a gracious woman retaineth honor, and strong men retain riches. Now, this is not referring to physically strong men. This doesn't mean that if you're strong enough to fend off thieves, and nobody's going to steal your wallet when you're out walking on the sidewalk, nobody's going to break into your house because you're a strong enough man to protect your goods. That could be a very small explanation of this verse. But this verse is not talking about physically strong men. This is talking about men that have strength of character. They have wisdom. And I got a verse to prove that. You want to know what a truly strong man is? He's a wise man. Proverbs 24, 3 through 5. The wise man, the man that has strength of character, he's the one that's going to fight off the enemy that wants to take his money. And you know who the number one enemy is that wants to take your money? You know who it is? It's not the government. It's not the IRS. It's not thieves. It's not school boards. It's not anybody else. You know who the number one enemy is that wants to take your money and waste it? You! That's who it is. It's me. It's you. It's yourself, in other words. Yourself is your number one enemy that wants to take your money. And a wise man, a strong man, will retain it. He will say no to himself. Proverbs 24, 3 through 5. Through wisdom is an house builded, and by understanding it is established. And by knowledge shall the chambers be filled with all precious and pleasant riches. And then look at the connection here. A wise man is strong, yea, a man of knowledge increaseth strength. How do you fill your chambers with precious and pleasant riches? It's by being wise. It's by being strong, by denying yourself, denying your desire to consume, to buy things you don't need or that you can't afford. Saving, in other words, and then holding on to those savings. Now, what I'm going to say next is just a logical conclusion from the scripture. Don't get mad at me, okay? Don't shoot the messenger, okay? Based on the three verses that I just read, if you spend everything you make, you are demonstrating that you are a weak, foolish person. Strong man retains riches. If you don't, you're weak. The foolish man spendeth it up. If you do that, you're foolish, right? So don't shoot the messenger. Now, it's wise and godly to save money and to not spend everything we make. There are several reasons for this, but I think the first reason is that in order to give a portion of our income to God, like we're supposed to, you have to be a saver. right? Because you have to lay up what you're going to give to God. You have to not spend it on yourself in order to have it to give to God. Now, when I'm talking about savings, I'm not talking about the money that you set aside for God. You should do that. But I'm talking about additional money that you're saving for yourself and for your family to take care of yourself and possibly to help others out as well. But we should definitely give a portion of our income to God, and that requires saving, requires self-denial. Proverbs 3, 9 through 10. And then when you do this, if you will save that portion of your income that God wants, if you'll do that, He'll help you to save more for yourself. He will see to it that yourself will be taken care of. If you're, operate your life in accordance with His precepts. Proverbs 3, 9 through 10. Honor the Lord with thy substance and with the first fruits of all thine increase. And here's the promise. So shall thy barns be filled with plenty, and thy presses shall burst out with new wine. If you honor the Lord with your substance and the first fruits of all your increase, God gives it back to you. Your barns will be filled with plenty. Your presses will burst out with new wine. But you have to, first of all, deny yourself, deny your desire to consume everything you make in order to lay up in store to give to the Lord and His causes. And I give you a verse, I didn't have it in the outline, but giving to the Lord requires saving. 1 Corinthians 16, 1 through 2. I'm not preaching some kind of a prosperity gospel, but there is a sense in which giving to the Lord is an investment that pays dividends. It really does. I mean, it just said it. Your barns will be filled with plenty. The Lord will take care of those who take care of things that He's told them to take care of in the spiritual realm. 1 Corinthians 16, 1 through 2. Now concerning the collection for the saints, I have given order to the churches of Galatia, even so do ye. I missed an as there. Let me read that again. Now, concerning the collection for the saints, as I have given order to the churches of Galatia, even so do ye. Upon the first day of the week, let every one of you lay by him in store, as God hath prospered him, that there be no gatherings when I come. So Paul is instructing them, as he did some other churches, to lay up, to be able to give an offering to, for the help of the poor saints in Jerusalem. There was a dearth that had happened in Jerusalem, and these people were in desperate straits. They were believers. And so Paul's having some of the other churches take up a collection for them. And he was going to come around, and he was going to get this collection, and then he was going to take it, or either they were going to designate somebody, or he was going to go and take it to Jerusalem. But he instructs them, start laying up now. Every week, lay by himself in store for this offering for the Lord's people. And that's an excellent principle in general. Lay by yourself in store. Not just for the Lord's money, but lay by yourself each week, each 2 weeks, each month, however often you get paid, lay by in store every time. You save a percentage of everything that comes in. And I'll talk about that later, probably yet today. And then 1 Corinthians 9, 7 through 14 just teaches that we ought to lay up to be able to support the ministry. And I've read these verses many times. Paul says that nobody goes to a warfare on his own. Soldier doesn't pay his own way. If you milk the flock, you get to eat of the milk of the flock. They that serve the altar of the Levites were partaker of the altar, he says. And then he concludes by saying, even so, them that preach the gospel should live of the gospel. Right, so this is part of our duty as Christians, and this requires, of course, saving in order to do that. But we should also save for a rainy day and for retirement, because there's coming a day, unless you just drop over dead in your working years, which happens. That does happen to people sometimes. But let me tell you what, that is not a financial plan. It's not a financial plan to say, you know what, some people just drop over dead when they're 40, therefore I don't have to save anything, or 65 or whatever. I don't have to save because, I could die. Yeah, you could. And you could live to 95 and be eating dog food for the last 10 years of your life too, right? So not exactly a good financial plan. We ought to be laying up for a rainy day and for retirement. And the Bible teaches this. Proverbs 6, 6-9. It would be really nice if the Lord would just tell us when we're going to die. Because then you'd know exactly how much I need to save up. I need to save up X amount. I'll have enough to get me to the end. But he doesn't tell us that. You don't know. You could die at 65 like your dad did. I think it was around that age. Or 61 like my grandfather did. Or you could die at my grandmother, his widow, is 91, still living 30 years later. You don't know how long you're going to live. So you have to prepare for that as best you can. And it's a good thing the Lord doesn't tell us when we're going to die, because this world would be a complete mess. Can you imagine how people would live if they knew they were going to die in a certain amount of days, weeks, months, years, whatever? Imagine how worldly people would live. I mean, they're going to go out there and have all the fun, quote unquote, they possibly can, right until the end. There certainly would be no money laid up for inheritance for a lot of people, that's for sure. If people knew when the exact day they were going to die, they'd just blow it all. A lot of people would. Anyway, Proverbs 6. This is the verse that I read in the morning scripture reading. Proverbs 6, 6 through 9. Go to the ant, thou sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise, which having no guide, overseer, or ruler, provideth her meat in the summer and gathereth her food in the harvest. How long wilt thou sleep, O sluggard? When wilt thou arise out of thy sleep? So here, the Lord tells us to go to the ant. And this is pathetic. This is pathetic that we as human beings have to be told to look at the ants in order to learn how to lay up for the future, for rainy days, and for retirement. Go to the ant. You know how big an ant's brain is? I don't either. But it's like the size of a pinhead, right? Go to this little pin-headed creature that probably has an IQ of like 1 or something like that, and learn from him about how you ought to lay up for the future. I mean, think about that. God has bred it into them, given them instinct that they just know what they should do. We're a little different. We don't have an instinct to know the right thing to do regarding most things. You ever notice that? Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he won't depart from it. Try not training up a child and see what happens to him, right? We don't know the right way to go innately, but God has told us. He's given us his word. So we don't have an excuse. He's told us how to do it. That's the purpose of this sermon series, is to show you how to do it from the scripture. The ants lay up. They provide their meat in the summer. They gather their food in the harvest, right? During working years of life, they're busy. They're working hard and they're laying it up. And when the harvest comes and when they have worked all the year, then they're really reaping that harvest and they're laying up in that anthill as much as they can, because winter's coming and they're not going to be able to work anymore. The parallel is obvious. But if it's not obvious enough, I will get to that later on and I will break this down a little bit verse by verse and apply it to our lives, but that's not going to be today. Proverbs 30 and verse 25. Proverbs 30 and verse 25. The ants are a people not strong, yet they prepare their meat in the summer. They're not strong compared to us, and they're certainly not strong in intellect, right? But nevertheless, they prepare their meat in the summer. They lay it up in the harvest. They're a good example to follow. So I ask, why do ants know to lay up in store for the future, but most Americans don't? Why have ants figured it out, but most Americans haven't? And this isn't just my opinion. I'm going to give you some statistics. So now I've given you some scripture. I'm going to spend some time reading some other stuff. And like I said, in this series, there are times where I'm going to give you some extra biblical information to flesh out some of the principles that the scripture teaches. So when I say most Americans haven't figured out what the ant has, I'll give you some statistics that are going to prove it. the first batch here from 2015, so this is 10 years ago, and things haven't gotten any better and have gotten a lot worse, I think, in the last 10 years. The average American family savings account balance, this is 10 years ago again, $3,950. That's what the average American family has in non-retirement savings 10 years ago. Now they probably have less. So a half of an HVAC system maybe. Maybe enough to almost pay for the blown motor in your car. Right? Like a fraction of what you need for any major normal expense. You know, a roof on your house or something like that. You know, not very much. $4,000 is not much at all these days. Percentage of working Americans who are not saving for retirement, 40%. Now, I don't know if their financial plan is to win the lottery, to die of an aneurysm at 60, or I don't know what the financial plan here is, but 40% of Americans are not saving for retirement. And you think, well, that's because they don't have any money. You're wrong. You're wrong. I have another quote for you. It's not because they don't have money. It's because they spend all their money. It's not because they don't have extra money left over after their bills are paid. It's because they blow it. And I've got a quote for you here later on. Percent of American families who have no savings at all, 25%. One quarter of people have no savings. They are literally a flat tire away from bankruptcy if they can't put it on their credit card. You got no savings and your credit's maxed out, you're in some dangerous territory. Average amount saved for retirement, $35,000. Hope you're not planning to live for more than a year after retirement. $35,000 saved for retirement, that's it. The average American 10 years ago. Average American household debt. Now, these other numbers have been low, but when it comes to debt, Americans have it figured out. I mean, they're not going to be outdone by anybody. Average American household debt, $117,951. Now, that was 10 years ago. That number is going to be far higher today. Far higher. Now, that includes house debt. The average American home value, oh, for the days 10 years ago, $160,000. You know what kind of a house you can buy even in our little cheap, relatively inexpensive town of Excelsior Springs? Take $160,000 and see what kind of a house you can buy today. You don't want to live there. I've looked at enough houses. I've watched them daily. I don't even click on houses that are $160,000. There's no point. If it sounds too good to be true, it is. If it's 160,000, if it's under 200, forget about it. And really, honestly, if it's under 250, it's probably not really a place that, you know, you probably want to live long term. Maybe, possibly, but definitely under 200,000, I wouldn't even click on it. I'd rather live in my apartment any day. Any day. Anyway, back then it was 160,000. Average amount owed on a home mortgage, 95,000. So, they've got about, what, $65,000 in equity in their house. Average American household annual income, $43,000. Average credit card debt, $2,200. Percentage of American workers who postpone their retirement age this year, 24%. So, a quarter of them postponed their retirement because they couldn't afford to retire. And this was happening back when I worked at E-Tech in Ohio. This is 2009, 10, 11, 12 in there. There were people that had come back to work, engineers that had come back to work, that couldn't afford to stay retired. When I worked at the bus barn, there was a guy driving the bus, couldn't afford to stay retired. It's happening all the time. Percentage of people who are very confident about having enough money for retirement, 18%. That's not very high. Percentage of American adults who have no bank account, 7.7%. That's interesting. Not sure how you even would live without a bank account these days. I guess you do it with money orders and I don't know what. I don't know exactly how you do that. But And percentage of American adults who have an emergency fund to fall back on, 38%. So only a little over a third of people have an emergency fund to fall back on. Now, if you add up some of the numbers here, you see that the average American 10 years ago had basically $23,000 in non-mortgage debt, and he had about $81,000 in net worth, including his house. $81,000 in net worth. Subtract the equity out of the house. The average American has $16,000 in net worth. $16,000. I mean, here are people that have worked like their entire lives. You know, I don't know. I mean, this is averaging out Americans, but at least middle-aged people that have worked their entire lives, and they have a whopping $16,000 to their name outside of their home equity. And like I said, I don't include home equity necessarily, because you got to live somewhere. So to say, oh, my house is worth $400,000. Okay, big deal. You got to live in it, so it's not worth anything, really. I mean, it's worth something, but it's not liquid something that you can spend. If you wanted to spend it, you got to sell the house, and then where are you going to live? Someplace else where you got to spend the same amount of money, or, you know, similar. So take out the house value. This is 10 years ago, $16,000 in net worth. In the wealthiest country in the world. Now, the following here is from 1996. And as you can see, things have only gotten worse in the last 30 years. This is from Thomas J. Stanley's book, The Millionaire Next Door, which I've quoted, you know, a number of times in this study. He says, the median typical household in America has a net worth of less than $15,000, which is interesting. That's about the same as it was in 2015, by the figures that I just did. The median household income, or household in America, has a net worth less than $15,000, excluding home equity. Factor out equity in motor vehicles, furniture, and such, and guess what? And why you would even include equity in motor vehicles and furniture in your net worth? Those are depreciating assets, and if your car is going to be worth nothing in a few years, and your furniture is already worth nothing, try to sell it. You know, it's nothing. So why would you even include that in net worth? I have no idea. But anyway, factor out equity in motor vehicles, furniture, and such, and guess what? More often than not, the household has zero financial assets, such as stocks and bonds. How long could the average American household survive economically without a monthly check from an employer? Perhaps a month or two in most cases. Even those in the top quintile, so the top 20% of people, the wealthy in this country, are not really wealthy. Their median household net worth is less than $150,000. Now, this is 30 years ago, right? So that would be higher today. But still, you know, the wealthy back then, their median household net worth is less than $150,000. Excluding home equity, the median net worth for this group falls to less than $60,000. The wealthy 30 years ago had less than $60,000 in net worth. It's pitiful. I mean, think about it. Are you planning on, like, living at all after you can't work anymore? I mean, how long is $60,000 going to last you? Like, none. 2 years max, maybe? And what about our senior citizens? Without Social Security benefits, almost one half of Americans over 65 would live in poverty. And that's true. And you don't want to count on Social Security. The government's own figures say that the Social Security trust funds are empty in 2033. 2033, and at that point, automatic cuts come. That's what I've read. Trust funds are empty. And that's only in 8 years from now. You don't want to count on Social Security. Here's another one. This is from Fox Business. This is in 2014. Article called Median American Savings. A report from Interest.com, part of financial website Bankrate.com, finds the median household savings nationwide is zero, despite the average American, listen to this, having $668 left over each month after paying their bills. That's what I said. People, it's not that people don't have money to save. It's that they don't have discipline to save. They have, this is 10, 11 years ago, they have $668 a month left over after paying their bills, and they have zero saved. They literally spend every single penny. They blow through almost $700 a month on junk they don't need, going out to eat, buying crap on Amazon, whatever they're doing, right? They blow through almost $700 a month. That's why they don't have any saved. It's crazy. The site analyzed data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics and found that consumers are spending the leftover cash. Now, here's more recent statistics. This is from 2024. This is from a Ramsey survey on the state of personal finance in America in Q3 2024, so the third quarter 2024. And he reported the following. 50% of Americans said they are prepared financially for a recession. You'll have to pardon me if I don't believe that. People love to deceive themselves. This is self-reporting. 50% of Americans say they're financially prepared for a recession. I mean, the rest of the stats here are going to show this is not true. I mean, what do you mean prepared? Like, I'm prepared to read some bad news articles, or I'm prepared to lose my job for months on end, right? I mean, what do you mean? 50% of people are prepared to lose their job for months? You got to be kidding me. That's not even, came even close to being right. 1 in 10 U.S. adults are investing 15% or more, and 50% aren't investing any money at all. So only 10% of people are investing 15% or more, which is what I think everybody should be investing. 50%, nothing, not investing a thing. 49% of U.S. adults reported some difficulty paying bills. So this is what I'm saying. Half of people report difficulty paying bills. If you have difficulty paying bills, it means you're broke. Like, you don't have enough money to pay your bills. Like, you have nothing left over, right? So how can half the people are having trouble paying their bills and the other half are fully prepared to lose their job for months on end in a recession? I mean, it makes no sense. It makes no sense at all. And 1 in 3 Americans, 34%, were late on a bill payment in the last 90 days. 36% of Americans said their debt load increased in the past 3 months, and 34% said they're now carrying more than $10,000 in consumer debt. Credit cards, in other words. 10 grand on a credit card. You could do an interest calculator and figure out how much you're going to spend on $10,000 in a credit card, especially if you're making minimum payments at 20-some percent interest. You're going to spend tens of thousands of dollars on all that junk on Amazon that you didn't need in the first place. It's crazy. Over half of Americans, 54%, said they have accepted that debt is simply a way of life and no big deal. That's pitiful. I can say for me and my house, debt is not a way of life, and it is a big deal. And it should be the same for you. Because you know what? It's a big deal to God, who says, owe no man anything. The borrower is servant to the lender. Be ye not servants of men. Right? The borrower is the tail. The lender is the head. It's a big deal to God. It's not a big deal to Americans. But it's a big deal to God. On average, now get a load of this. On average, Americans plan to spend nearly $800 on gifts this coming holiday season. The same people who can't pay their bills, late on their bills, having trouble paying their bills, they're going to spend $800 on gifts for Christmas. Over half of U.S. adults, 54%, said that they will make a budget for their holiday spending, which means that 46% won't. No budget. I'm just going to go out there and just start swiping that card and just buy whatever I see because, you know, I like buying gifts for people. No budget. 35% of Americans said they probably won't be able to afford their holiday spending and will use credit cards to make up the difference. I have to say, and then there's a lot of competition for this position here, but I have to say this is probably the dumbest thing I have ever heard in my entire life. And I realize there's a lot of dumb things out there. 35% of people couldn't afford to buy their Christmas presents, and they put it on a credit card. That is just absolute insanity. Absolute insanity. Now, this is from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. This is from Q2 2024, so about a year ago. Household debt ticks up to $17.8 trillion in second quarter. Mortgage originations remain low. Total household debt rose by $109 billion to reach $17.8 trillion, according to the latest quarterly report on household debt and credit. $17.8 trillion in household debt in America. Now, I realize that number is probably astounding and meaningless at the same time, because who can even comprehend what $17.8 trillion is? It's such a huge number that you can't even really wrap your mind around it. Mortgage balances were up $77 billion to reach $12.52 trillion, while auto loans increased by $10 billion to reach $1.63 trillion. Americans owe over $1.5 trillion on auto loans. You know, it took our country like a couple of hundred years to amass $1 trillion in national debt. I think then we surpassed $1 trillion in the Reagan administration. It was something like that. I forget exactly when. But it took the country as a whole, the government, with all of its spending and the space race and all the wars, World War I, World War II, Vietnam. Like, it took the country all this time to go into debt $1 trillion. I wish I had the figure exactly what year that was. And Americans have done that with their cars, with their car loans. Crazy. And credit card balances increased by $27 billion to reach $1.14 trillion. So Americans have just almost close to as much money on credit cards as they do in their car loans. The volume of mortgage originations remain low, primarily due to subdued financing activity. Homeowners continue to increase balances on home equity lines of credit, HELOC. That's another name for a second mortgage, which is another really, really bad idea. Going into debt's bad, but taking a second mortgage on your house, where now you are risking losing your house for consumer items that you're trying to buy. That is madness. Madness. HELOC limits rose by $3 billion, marking the ninth consecutive quarterly increase. Here's from an article, Radical Fire article. This is from 2023, so I'm giving you some more recent stuff here. All of these stats don't all line up, right? But you're going to get the picture anyway that things are bad, you know, regardless of who exactly is right, things are bad. And that's what I want to get through your head. Like, I want to show you how bad the situation is. 54% of Americans live paycheck to paycheck. According to a Payments and Lending Club survey, 54% of Americans live paycheck to paycheck. In addition to that, 40% of people earning more than $100,000 per year said they lived paycheck to paycheck as well. I've said this before, it doesn't matter how much you make. 54% of average Joes are living paycheck to paycheck, and 40% of people making over $100,000 are living paycheck to paycheck. That's because people in general are undisciplined, and the more they make, the more they spend, right? So it doesn't really matter. If you take the average person and give them an extra $10,000 a year, it wouldn't matter one bit. He'd just have an extra $10,000 in junk that he doesn't need, or, you know, food that he's already consumed or whatever. 61% of Americans struggle to pay a $1,000 emergency. So that means that almost two-thirds of people don't have $1,000 in their bank account. That's what that means. If you struggle to pay a $1,000 emergency, it means you don't have $1,000. 61% of people. It's crazy. And no wonder anxiety levels are off the charts. I mean, I've already have anxiety problems. Imagine if I didn't have $1,000 to my name. My goodness, I'd be in a mental institution or something. It's crazy. Only 24% of millennials have basic financial literacy. That's shocking. I would think it's more like 75%. Or no, they only have it. Oh, I'm sorry. More like 5%. Sorry. 24% of America, of millennials have basic financial literacy. I mean, I would say that's probably true of literacy in general. Like about a quarter of them have literacy, period. You say, well, that's really harsh. I see what people, I manage a business website, and so I see what people do. People sign up, they can't capitalize their name. People leave a review. This is the average, I'd say at least more than half probably. They leave a review, no capitalization, no punctuation, no grammar's non-existent. I mean, this is like what I see day in, day out. We live in a country of illiterate people, especially young people. It's pitiful. Is it any wonder that only 24% of millennials have basic financial literacy? Were they ever taught it? They certainly weren't taught it at home. I mean, their parents don't have any financial literacy. And they're not taught it in school. They don't teach them anything in school. They don't teach them personal finance, to my knowledge anyway. And if they do, they want to teach them how to, you know, about derivative markets and how to trade options and all this stuff. It's like junk that they don't need to know. You know, teach them like the basics of personal finance, how to save money, how to underconsume, how to be frugal, how to, you know, invest in your 401k and simple stuff. And these school districts want more of our money. That, you know, these kids get out of school, they don't have basic financial literacy, but the school districts want to jack up your taxes so they can pay teachers more to teach them what? 21% of Americans don't save anything of their annual income. One in three Americans have saved zero for retirement. 56% have less than $10,000 saved for retirement. That's going to be a really nice few months of your golden years there. You know, $10,000 saved for retirement. Hopefully you don't plan to live more than 3 months or so. A few months maybe, I don't know. A recent, this is from MarketWatch 2024 again. A recent MarketWatch Guides survey found that 62.2% of Americans feel they are living paycheck to paycheck. The same survey found that of the 48.6% of respondents who reported being broke, 92.1% were living paycheck to paycheck. Americans are broke. And they've been broke for a long time. This is from 2007. This is in Dave Ramsey's book, The Total Money Makeover. He says 49% of Americans could cover less than 1 month's expenses if they lost their income. 1 month. Half, this is a long time. It was 15, 18 years ago. Half of people, they didn't have a job for a month. They'd be in desperate straits. This is from 2011 in his other book, Dave Ramsey's Complete Guide to Money. He said 70% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck, just one missed payday away from disaster. And then another quote from that same book, National Payroll Week's 2008, quote, Getting Paid in America, unquote, survey found that 70% of Americans would have difficulty meeting current financial obligations if their next paycheck was delayed by only 1 week. 1 week. And that happens to people. I mean, some people, if their paycheck was delayed 1 day, checks are bouncing like bouncy balls. I mean, they got checks, they're waiting for that check to get there on the 15th, and if it doesn't get there on the 15th, checks are bouncing. Like, that's crazy. That is no way to live. Now, why else should we save? So there, I wanted to give you one of the reasons to save is because you don't want to be like most everybody else out there who is in a very dangerous situation, very financially dangerous situation. But why else should we save? Well, we should save to help the poor. I'll give you a couple few verses here. Proverbs 22 and verse 9. Those that help the poor, the Bible says, will be blessed. So this is a reason to save because, you know, if you haven't figured this out yet, life is not all about you. It's not all about yourself, right? It's about helping other people. And if you don't save money, you can't help other people, at least in many ways, because as I've said before, many times helping other people requires money. There's times where you can help them out with your time or, you know, your support or something like that, your emotional support. But many times helping other people requires money. And if you don't save, you're not going to be able to help other people. You're not going to be able to help the poor. Proverbs 22 and verse 9 says, "He that hath a bountiful eye shall be blessed, for he giveth of his bread to the poor." See, God blesses the man with the bountiful, not the greedy eye, not the man that wants to, you know, hog it all for himself, but the bountiful eye. He is a giving, generous person. He will be blessed. He gives to his bread to the poor, of his bread to the poor. The Bible teaches us that those that honor God will have mercy on the poor. Proverbs 14 and verse 31. Proverbs 14:31. "He that oppresseth the poor reproacheth his maker, but he that honoreth him hath mercy on the poor." If you have mercy on the poor, you are honoring God. God will bless the man that does that. "He that oppresseth the poor reproacheth his maker." And that's what gets me. I know this school tax has been on my mind. That's what one of the things that gets me about this school tax is these people are oppressing the poor. Oh, it's no big deal. Raise your taxes by 10%. You know, it's only going to be, you know, just $200 or $300 extra per year. That's it. Oh, it just comes out to $25 a month. No big deal. Yeah, not for the fat cats at the school district that are making $192,000 a year. No, no big deal for them. Is it a big deal for the old lady, fixed income on Social Security, where $25 a month is the difference between buying some of her groceries or some medication that she has to have or something like that? It's a big deal for her. It's a big deal for a lot of these poor families here with children. There's a lot of poor people in this community. You know that, right? I mean, this community is a relatively impoverished community, at least in some sectors of it. That's a big deal. A couple hundred dollars a year. Stealing it from these people to give it to the school district to increase the salaries of some of their administrators. Of course, they emphasize the teachers. They want to increase the teachers' salaries. Well, how about the 16 administrators? How about getting rid of some of these administrators that are making almost $200,000 a year and maybe using that to increase teacher salary? I made that point the other day. Probably didn't make any friends when I did it. That's oppressing the poor. Forcibly robbing them. They have no choice in the matter. You don't pay it, you lose your house. It's the mafia. Those that give to the poor will be repaid by God. Proverbs 19 and verse 17. Proverbs 19:17. "He that hath pity upon the poor lendeth unto the Lord, and that which he hath given will he pay him again." So when you lend to the Lord, or when you give to the poor, it's as if you're making a loan to the Lord. Now, you know, they say like the U.S. government treasuries and then the banks, the FDIC, is backed up by the full faith and credit of the U.S. government. Like, so they, you know, you can trust us with your money because we got the full faith and credit of the U.S. government. Well, when you give to the poor, you've got the full faith and credit of God Almighty, who says he will repay that loan. You can trust him. You can't trust don't trust the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, but you can trust the Lord. When he says he'll repay it, he'll repay it. Guaranteed. With interest, I suspect. Not I suspect. I know it. I know it. I've experienced it. The Lord pays back with like big time dividends. Big time dividends. Proverbs 28 and verse 27. Proverbs 28:27. He that giveth unto the poor shall not lack, but he that hideth his eyes shall have many a curse. You think, well, if I give to the poor, then I'm not going to have for myself. Well, God says you're not going to lack. But he also says, if you hide your eyes, you'll have many a curse. You see a poor man, a truly poor man, who is in need, as the Bible qualifies it, like food, clothing, shelter, medical care. And I'm not talking about some fool that has drunk all his money away or shooting up with heroin or something like that. I'm talking about a poor person that is poor, not due to his own stupid decisions, but he's just, something's happened to him. Just, you know, he's just fallen on hard times. And you look the other way, you're going to have many a curse. Now, I'm not talking about when you see the infomercial, the commercial on television, because that's just not fair. There are billions of poor people in this world, and if you literally gave to every single one of them when you saw the commercial, yeah, you can't do that, right? Obviously. This was not written when there was TV being streamed all over the world, right? This was written when you're walking down the sidewalk and you see a poor person, right? And that's what's true today. In your normal course of life, if you find a poor person who is in need, then you help him. If he meets the biblical criteria for help. And then why should we save? Well, here's one last reason. So that we should have, we will have an inheritance to give to our children and grandchildren. Proverbs 13 and verse 22. Supposed to, a good man gives an inheritance. Well, you can't do that without saving. Proverbs 13 and verse 22. A good man leaveth an inheritance to his children's children, and the wealth of the sinner is laid up for the just. So a good man will not spend all of his money on himself. He will lay it up so that he has to give an inheritance not only to his children, but to his grandchildren. So that's another reason to save. Proverbs 19 and verse 14. House and riches are the inheritance of fathers, and a prudent wife is from the Lord. House and riches are the inheritance of, or in this case, from fathers. They come of fathers. That's what fathers are supposed to do. Lay up and have laid up to leave to the next generation. And this is a New Testament principle as well. 2 Corinthians 12 and verse 14. 2 Corinthians 12, 14. Now, in some cultures, they have it completely backwards. They think that children are to lay up for the parents. The Bible teaches the opposite. Parents are to lay up for the children. Proverbs, 2 Corinthians 12, 14. Behold, the third time I am ready to come to you, Paul writes to the Corinthians. And I will not be burdensome to you, for I seek not yours, but you. For the children ought not to lay up for the parents, but the parents for the children. And I will very gladly spend and be spent for you, though the more abundantly I love you, the less I be loved. He's using a principle from our physical, material lives, however you want to say it, to make a spiritual point. The spiritual point is that he, as the apostle, he is willing to spend and be spent for them. He is giving to them what he has, right? But he's basing it on the principle that children, that parents ought to lay up for the children, not children for the parents. It's one thing taking care of aged parents when they've got to the end of their lives, and maybe they did. Maybe they ended up living well into their 90s, and their savings that they were able to save just couldn't make it to the end. They tried, they saved, they were frugal their whole lives, they did what they could, and they get to the end and they just run out. Okay, well then, it's our duty as children to help them out and take care of them. But for any parent to think, oh, you know, I'm not going to worry about it, I've got kids to take care of me, you are wrong. You are wrong. That is a unbiblical, unchristian attitude. Now, another reason to save is to have an emergency fund. Unexpected expenses happen and should be planned for. And in most of what rest of what I've written here, I put unexpected in quotes. Unexpected expenses happen and should be planned for. They're not really unexpected. Like, oh, it just blew me away. My car broke down. Really? Like, cars break down. Blew me away. I slipped and twisted my ankle, and I've got this $1,000 hospital bill. Like, well, yeah, that's life. That's what happens, right? My hot water tank went out, right, Wayne? Was that unexpected? I mean, maybe you didn't expect it that day, but I was hoping that water tank would last me the rest of my life. I mean, that's crazy, right? I mean, you should expect it's going to go out. You should expect your HVAC system is going to go out. You should expect your car is going to break down. You should expect all these kind of things. I got a whole list of them here in a second. Because this is what happens in life. Unexpected things happen. Bad things happen. Ecclesiastes 9, 11 through 12. Ecclesiastes 9, 11 through 12. Things don't go the way that they're supposed to, right? The way it's supposed to work is nothing bad's ever going to happen to me and everything's going to work perfectly and my car's going to run forever and it's going to, you know, I'm going to get a million miles out of it and I'm never going to have to put a dime into it. That's the way it's supposed to work, right? I'm never going to get sick, I'm never going to get injured, I'm never going to lose my job, right? That's the way it's supposed to work. That's not how it works. Ecclesiastes 9:11, I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift. And the swift are supposed to win, but you know sometimes they don't. Nor the battle to the strong. You know, the strong are supposed to win the war, but sometimes they don't. Neither yet bread to the wise. You know, wise people are supposed to have plenty. Well, sometimes that doesn't work out either. Nor yet riches to men of understanding, just because you have, you know, you got good sense. You know, you should be rich. Well, not always. Nor yet favor to men of skill, but time and chance happeneth to them all. You know, stuff happens. Bad stuff happens. For man also knoweth not his time, as the fishes that are taken in an evil net, and as the birds that are caught in the snare, so are the sons of men snared in an evil time when it falleth suddenly upon them. That's what happens. Just like the fish that gets caught in the net. The bird that gets caught in the snare. Sometimes you are just that fish. You are that bird. Why didn't somebody else get caught? Well, go ask God about it. So you got to prepare for these kind of things. If you own a house, you better be financially prepared for major, quote, unexpected expenses, like cracked foundations, water leaks, pipes breaking, mold, roof leaks, HVACs breaking, appliances going out that cost thousands of dollars, septic problems, plumbing problems, electrical problems, hot water tanks going out, and on and on and on. You better have money laid up, and you better be laying up money every single month because stuff is going to happen. I know full well, Lord willing, if we're able to buy a house, it's not like, woohoo, I'm going to have my whole rent payment now that I can just go out and blow and go out to eat. No, you know what's going to happen to my whole rent payment? It's going to go in an account called house maintenance. And probably every penny of it and more is going to go out to taxes, insurance, maintenance, and whatever else home ownership is going to entail. It's not going to save me a penny. Not a penny. But what dumb people do is think, sweet, I just got a house. There's nothing wrong with it. I don't need to lay up for expenses, right? I'm not gonna, nothing's going to go wrong for a while. I'll just spend this old rent money temporarily, you know, because I can kind of loosen up the belt a little bit. You know, I don't have to lay up all this money that I was spending on rent. I can go out to eat a little bit. I can just go out and enjoy myself, maybe buy some stuff I kind of like to have, you know, and then I'll get saving for that house maintenance stuff later. You know, and then a year goes by and 2 years and 5 years. I'll get to that later. And then all of a sudden, oh, I need a $15,000 roof and I don't have any money. Now what am I going to do? It's like when you pay that car off. I've said it before, I'll say it again. When you pay the car off, make the car payment to yourself. But what do people do? I've got an extra $400, $500, $600 now a month. I can just go out and now I can spend it on other stuff. Yeah, and what happens in 5 years when the car needs replaced and, oh, now I got to take out another car loan, pay more interest, get on the old hamster wheel again for the rest of my life. Need to have an emergency fund. The more vehicles and equipment you own, the more they own you, number one, and the more unexpected expenses you should expect. If you haven't figured it out yet, and I'm sure you have, vehicles and equipment are a money pit. They are a money pit. And if you really want to go bankrupt fast, get yourself a boat or two. Boats, you know what that stands for. Bust out another thousand. Bankruptcy on a trailer, right? Get yourself a boat. That's a good way to be broke. Yep, all that stuff. It's all going to require maintenance. So if the more you have, the more you better be laying aside for an emergency fund. If you have no emergency fund, you are one unexpected expense away from financial hardship or financial ruin. Dave Ramsey said in his book, Dave Ramsey's Complete Guide to Money, he said an emergency fund doesn't just give you peace of mind, it also saves you money on insurance because you can afford a higher deductible. This is again goes back to the rich person mindset versus the broke person mindset. The broke person mindset is, I'm gonna try. I don't know what your deductibles are. Okay, so I'm not picking on anybody here. I don't know what you have. It doesn't matter to me. You make your own decisions. The poor person mindset is, I'm gonna get a $100 deductible. That way, something happens, I'm gonna have very little money out of my pocket. I don't have to worry about having a bunch of money laid up because you know then I can just. It's just $100 and it all gets fixed, right? The millionaire mindset, the rich person mindset is, I'm going to have a really high deductible. I'm going to have money in savings. And chances are, I'm never going to use the deductible. You know how many, I'm not saying this couldn't happen. I could wreck my car today. But do you know how many car accidents that I've had that I actually turned into the insurance company and had them fix my car in over 25 years of driving? Zero, I'm pretty sure. Hit a couple of deer, but that was deer. My brother totaled my car. I didn't do that one. I don't think I've actually ever turned in an accident to have the insurance company make a payment on a car accident in 25 years. Of course, it could happen. I know it could happen, but the point is, I could have been paying these crazy insurance premiums with a $100 deductible for all these years to save myself a couple $100 on a deductible and have spent thousands of dollars over the course of 25 years on that. So yeah, higher deductibles. If you get the emergency fund, you can do that. You can save yourself money. Again, I was not boasting whatsoever. I could wreck the car today. I know that. I'm just saying, in my own experience anyway, you know, it's not like you're wrecking your car every week. Although with the way that I drive, I mean, it could happen every week because I'm a very distracted driver, but the Lord has been very merciful to me. An emergency fund will be discussed in more detail later on in the section on Dave Ramsey's baby steps. So we'll get to that later. And I think I'm gonna call it quits again. I'm stopping a few pages short. Well, it seems like every Sunday that happens. So we'll pick it up next time, and we'll talk about when to save. And I just give you a little bit of a teaser. If you're waiting until you're 4 years old, you are way behind the curve. Okay. You better start by the time you're 3, or you're off to a financially bad start in life. But we'll get to that next week, Lord willing.